Hello and welcome to another edition of the Library Cafe, a weekly program of table talk about books, ideas, and the formation and circulation of knowledge. I'm Thomas Hill. Our guest today is Meg Stewart, academic computing consultant and a member of Computing and Information Services here at Vassar College, and a specialist in the subject we're going to be discussing today, GIS, or Geographic Information Systems. Welcome, Meg.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Can you tell us a bit about your own background and how you came to be interested in GIS? You have a background in geology?
I do. I have a advanced degree in geology. I'm really a structural geologist, but I worked for a while in environmental consulting and learned GIS in that field and parlayed that into a job here at Vassar.
And you started out at the University of Nevada?
Nevada, Las Vegas.
So it must be interesting, that part of the world for a geologist.
Oh, it's a great place for geology, because there aren't any trees in the way. You can see everything there. And some of the geology is very complex, and with trees in the way, you can't figure things out as easily as you can in Nevada and Utah.
And you're just a stone's throw there from the Grand Canyon.
So
to start, can you tell us what a geographic information system is?
Well, I'll give you the explanation that I tell people when they ask me what I do, but it's making maps on a computer, basically.
Okay. That's the short answer. What about the long answer?
The long answer is, with a GIS, you have spatially related data, and that means it has a longitude and a latitude, and these data can be layered in the computer application, and within and between those data layers, you can make analyses, spatial analyses, and look for spatial relationships between and among the layers of data.
So the mapping systems that some people have in their automobiles now, are those geographic information systems?
In a way, yes. They're also linked to GPS, Global Positioning System, and that GPS then is using satellites, 20-something satellites that are up hovering around the globe, for a person in his or her car to figure out where that car is in the world. And then underneath the map, underneath this point on this map, is sort of a GIS, which is a set of street lines.
So what do GIS applications do that conventional maps can't do?
Well, by conventional maps, I think you mean a paper map.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's a printed out piece of paper. It's a done map. You can't play with it. You just use your eyes to look at it. By play with it, I mean in a GIS, you have the data and you can have your street lines on there, and you can have some information like from a realtor. You have street addresses, and you can plot those street addresses in the GIS as points, and you can look and see where they come up and plan your street route according to how they come up in a GIS. And it's a lot more, it's just interactive.
Yeah.
And a map, a paper map, is not interactive.
I see.
You just hold it and look at it. And
so the reader, in a sense, has more control than the user of a map.
Right, that's right.
So what value is there, then, in combining different types of information in a GIS system?
Well, the value is you can have many, many layers of data. And by that I mean soils or streams or topography, digital elevation models. You can have aerial photographs that all of these data show you land use, essentially. And what you can do in a GIS is query the data. And you can, for instance, say you have contaminated sites, or you've taken samples along a creek, and some of the samples have a high level of arsenic, for instance. And from that information, you can make a buffer around where the higher contaminated areas are, and then look at who lives in that area and maybe send them a letter or something. And so who lives in the area then would be another set of data, another layer of data. That would be like the tax parcel information. And in that data layer, you have the person who owns the house, their address, and you can send the information and say, don't allow your dog to drink from the creek or your children to play in the creek because there's a high level of arsenic in your creek. You can use those data for other things, not just to inform your neighbors or inform community members, but you can then use it in a bigger scheme of looking at contamination or using the soils information to see maybe they play a part. Maybe the geology already has a high level of arsenic in it. All of this can be put in a GIS. If you look at past land use and know that there was an orchard in this area where the high arsenic is, then that's possibly contributing to the high levels. And you can look at historical data, you can look at current data, and if you have it spatially related, you align the layers like mylar. The layers of mylar are the layers of data. If they align with each other properly in space, then you can make these analyses across the data layers.
So it allows you to essentially perform analyses on the data apart from just seeing the data.
Yes. Sometimes our eyes are really clever and they're really useful tools. So are our brains. But sometimes you don't pick up on relationships with just your eyes and brain.
Yeah. So do these systems ever then tabulate the data in such a way that the system itself does the analysis, or is the analysis done outside of the system once the information is all layered?
Well, you need to ask smart questions of the data, and then it will tabulate what you're asking.
I see. Why is it that GIS systems as computing applications are attracting such attention in education and higher education in particular?
Yeah, that's a good question. GIS is a useful application in all disciplines, in the liberal arts in particular.
Not just the earth sciences.
Not just the earth sciences and not just geography. And so one could use GIS in history or even in English. But even mathematics, I've heard of some applications of GIS in math. And it fits nicely into a place like Vassar, where we're very interdisciplinary. And GIS has been used in exercises and classes outside of geology and geography in projects that involve multiple departments and disciplines. The other answer to that is that GIS outside of the liberal arts is also popular as a skill set. Many businesses and every business probably is using GIS now to evaluate their customer base. And you go to Toys R Us and they ask you your zip code or your phone number, they're going to put that in their GIS and figure out how to market to you. Yeah. So it's used in county planning, it's used in environmental fields, and in many fields it's used.
Yeah. Can you talk about the idea of spatial literacy in this connection?
Yeah, that is really interesting. It's been something that I've been thinking about a lot lately because there was a National Research Council book that came out called Learning to Think Spatially, I believe. And what they're talking about is spatial literacy should be thought of as an additional literacy that young people and college students should be learning along with reading, writing, and arithmetic. And spatial literacy then is just learning to how to fit pieces together to like set up a child seat so that it's safe in your car, learning how to read the instructions and put things together so that it's a safe product. Likewise, learning how to read a map so that you don't get lost. And I think it's an interesting concept, and as a geologist, I haven't really thought about it. As a geographer, if I were a geographer, I might have thought about it more, but I'm thinking about it more lately.
Some people seem more disposed to being spatially literate. Yeah. I mean, almost cognitively. Some people seem to have a sense of direction.
Right. Born with that skill. I certainly do think it can be learned, because I've seen that with students who, at the beginning of a GIS or a cartography course, really feel reticent about jumping into it, or I can't really do it. Like, some students have a math phobia. They'll have a geospatial phobia, I guess. But by the end of it, they're the ones that are doing the most interesting projects.
That's interesting. Can you talk about how faculty and students here at Vassar use GIS? I know you have a slate of very interesting projects that you've done in the past and that are ongoing.
Yeah. Faculty, we have some core users of GIS here at Vassar, and that's really not that many, but there are other faculty members who are interested in using GIS, but they'll have their students work on it and get the projects that they're working on into a GIS. We have people working on the Casperkill Watershed Project. Mm-hmm. That project is all in a GIS geodatabase where all the data are entered and people are collaborating. That's involving the chemistry department and biologists and geologists and geographers. Also, a sociologist is on that project. People are using GIS to map census data and have students look at the relationship between various populations and demographics and look at certain types of environmental hazards. The recent Katrina catastrophe in New Orleans has really lended itself to using GIS data to have students look at where people live. Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of places where people live and where houses have been built that are probably not a good place to have built originally. And one of the things that's obvious in a GIS is, for instance, along the Mississippi River, how rivers just tend to flood. They go out of their banks mm-hmm. and they deposit minerals across the landscape. Those minerals make the floodplain a good place to farm, mm-hmm. but they're not a good place to live. Mm-hmm. So GIS can help us look at that sort of thing.
Interesting. I notice in some of the photographs you have of these projects, your students are actually using GIS while they're in the field on tablet PCs.
Right.
Is there something about using tablet PCs that lends itself to this kind of application?
Well, when I first noticed a tablet PC a few years ago, I thought that it was an intriguing idea to take a full-fledged laptop out into the field and have the students essentially write on the monitor mm-hmm. with the pen. So with a tablet PC, it's a full laptop, but you can write on the monitor, and you can then load data onto these tablets.
Yeah, they look to me a lot like the ancient wax tablets that people used to write on. And in fact, there was a scene in the episode before the last episode of Rome where Mark Antony is in his camp and someone's taking notes.
Uh-huh.
And I had to look twice because I thought the soldier was writing on a tablet. He looked so much like,
well, this isn't wax, but it's more permanent than wax.
But you can't take it out in the field quite easily.
You can take it out in the field. The ones that we have on campus, you just can't take them out when it's raining or if it's a snowy day like this today. But what we've done in the past, geologists, geographers, anybody who's mapped outside, we've taken a piece of paper or a map, a mm-hmm. plain map, maybe with some topography on it, maybe with some street lines, and used a pen or a pencil and drawn in fault contacts mm-hmm. or locations of tree stands or some interesting thing we thought was needed to be mapped. And then when you have that piece of paper, you go back to a computer lab and then put that data into a GIS. And so what might end up happening is you're introducing a possibility of error mm-hmm. by transcribing something a little bit off. What the students have out in the field with their tablet PCs is they have a nice aerial photograph that shows whatever you see in an aerial photograph, which could be where a stream is or where houses are or where mowed grass is or forest stands of mm-hmm. trees are, and some of them are deciduous, some of them are evergreen, and it can help you find where you are. Then add into it that you can attach a GPS, global positioning system receiver, onto your tablet.
And so you can identify exactly where you are.
Yes, within 15 meters. But the ones we have are more accurate than
that. So you use the tablets essentially to collect data.
Yes. You collect the data right where you are.
Now, tablet PCs are rather expensive, but would a PDA work for this?
Well, it would. It definitely would, and we are looking into that right now. Mm-hmm. Marianne Cunningham and some of her colleagues, Brian McAdoo, Kirsten Menking, and Lucy Johnson, got a Francis Ferguson Technology Fund grant, and they'll be getting some PDAs to test out this idea that it's less expensive, it's easier for students to carry a PDA with mapping software on it.
A little more portable, but you don't have as much to work with.
Right.
I'm wondering, are there surveys underway that ordinary people with access to, if not tablet PCs, PDAs could participate in as amateur geographers in the way that amateur astronomers collect data for the Sloan Digital Sky Survey? I haven't heard of any, but it's an interesting...
It is a good idea. Yeah. It's a good idea for maybe a community project.
Yeah.
You could use your Garmin or your handheld GPS, PDA GPS, and plot points. And these points could maybe be locations of a salamander study that somebody wanted to help contribute to, or a bird count study.
Yeah,
people could definitely
contribute. Thinking the way with the internet, writing and communication are becoming such, in some respects, a collective endeavor with the blogosphere. That if GIS were to move along those same lines.
Absolutely. Right. And when I first started doing GIS, getting into GIS, this was probably 95, I guess, I really had a hard time finding data.
Mm-hmm.
And it was definitely not available on the web. One needed to get a CD or even a little mini cassette and put it in a tape drive of data, and it was difficult.
Yeah.
And now you can get all kinds of data on the web.
Mm-hmm.
It's really democratized geographic information, and the same thing with using a GPS.
Oh,
it helps people to feel like nobody owns the data, like the government or something. They can be a part of it and use it and play with it.
Google Maps, in some respects, contributes to this, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
And actually, Google Maps, I don't know if this is a GIS system, but they do have layers of data to some extent, and that they will identify businesses for you on the map.
Right.
And in some areas, like New York, they actually have photographs of storefronts on every street.
I haven't yet seen that.
Yeah, it's quite interesting.
I've seen the photographs in Google Maps and Google Earth.
Yeah, you can actually take a walk down First Avenue if you want and see every shop.
Mm-hmm.
From corner to corner.
I've seen something where you could see somebody driving down a street. And actually, what I've heard about with Microsoft's version of their virtual globe, I think it's called Virtual Earth, they would like to get to the point where they're putting in these videos of driving on a street.
Uh-huh.
So that's if somebody wanted to go and figure out where a place was, they can look at these videos and then say, oh, okay, it's this brownstone here and it's not the white building.
Yeah, you'd be able to move through the environment, essentially, the virtual environment.
Right.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Most of the major flight simulators now, as you're flying, you can actually see the layout of the terrain below you and you can see where cities are and you can actually see at a given point where other aircraft are in the sky in real time.
Wow.
You have real-time weather, so all these kinds of data sets are being put together in a spatialized environment. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, it is. And you said you didn't know if Google Maps was a GIS. I tend to think of Google Maps, which is sort of a flat map, and Google Earth, which is sort of a virtual globe.
Yeah.
I think of them as a GIS, but really all of the GIS is done behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And the user is just sort of passive, and you can't play with the data. It's not a robust GIS. It's geographic information, but it's...
You know, I was going to ask you about the environmental inventory of the Mid-Hudson Valley.
It was part of a grant that we got, and it sort of really jump-started our GIS database for the local area. We got an Environmental Protection Agency-funded grant, mostly to look at environmental justice issues in the area. And, I mean, we talked about it at meetings, and I gave presentations here and there on it, and so did my colleagues Jill Schneiderman and you, Joe, and we had a lot of students working on that project, but we never really said, yes, there's this environmental justice is happening here, and we can see it, but it's not as clear as it is in places like Queens. So what we did with the data is look at demographic data and then plot toxic release inventory sites and hazardous waste sites and see what areas they're in, what neighborhoods they're in. And what we've found really is that they are on the outskirts of towns, Beacon, Newburgh, Poughkeepsie, you know, one would think, oh, they're going to be right in there with the people of color or the low-income people, but it's not necessarily true.
So the output for this kind of study, is it conventional journal articles then, mainly?
Not entirely. Dan Shapley from the Poughkeepsie Journal got in touch with us, and he did an article on that in 04, I think it was, and I helped him by giving him a map and photograph. So, because it's something that local people would be interested in knowing about. And certainly there have been spills and such, like in East Fishkill, and where people want to know if there's contamination in their neighborhoods.
Yeah. So is there anything about working with GIS that you find frustrating as an educator? Is it difficult to get faculty interested where you feel the systems might be really useful to them in their teaching and research, but of course faculty time is quite precious.
Right. Well, yeah, there is something difficult or frustrating about working with GIS, and that is the time it takes to learn it is enormous. Once you go and you take a workshop or you work on a project and you think you understand it or you kind of get a handle, you need to actually continue to use the software or you'll forget the little tricks and the things that you've learned about the software. It's not exactly like using Word or even Excel or PowerPoint. A person is exposed in a workshop to all the things, all the great things that you can do in a GIS or many other great things. And then you come back home and if you don't use it right away in your office or your home or what have you, then you forget these great tools that are available. And I've given workshops to faculty members and it's pretty basic, but I see the light bulbs going off and the questions that are asked. You can tell that they're related to that faculty member's particular discipline. So you could tell that they're getting it. But then, since it's a difficult software and faculty members are under a time constraint, for the most part, at all levels of their careers, especially assistant professors, it's difficult for them to get into it. And one person said to me, well, I think it's that you need the kind of time to learn this software like you have in graduate school. And if you didn't learn it in graduate school, then you need to take a sabbatical to learn this type of software. And if, you know,
there's that much of a learning curve then. It's
I not think something you pick so. Up. I think so. And that the software tends to change with each new version in a minor way, but you do have to sort of keep up. One more thing I wanted to add is that students don't have such a difficult time. They can sort of take it all in, and the students are the ones who are bringing other faculty members from outside of geology and geography into using GIS. Our GIS program is booming because of students and the popularity with the students, and so we've gone from using the 10-seat GIS lab in Ely Hall to now using the 22-seat scientific visualization lab in MUD because the students want to take this class.
So we talked about collecting data for these systems, say with tablet PCs in the field, and I know other inputs into these systems would come from conventional mapping sources that are translated into these systems. But are there other ways that data is collected for these systems? I know you can put census data in, say.
Yeah, the census data, it's already set, and how they do it is set. And the same thing, too, with how street lines are determined. It's probably done by a county-by-county basis when a street changes or a new street comes in or an old street becomes one way or something like that. But if one were to do new data, say you wanted to add data maybe to a larger data set, like the biological survey may be interested in having people, community members, or maybe researchers contribute to the overall data set that's looking at bald eagles. And you can do that. You can create your own data in GIS. You can do that.
Just have to have a spatial location in, in the data that you can key
That's right. And and you do have to have metadata. You have to say why you think this was a bald eagle. You can't just be saying something's a bald eagle when really it was a seagull. But but there are ways to contribute new data to the data set.
As a librarian, I wonder about what happens to all the data that is collected.
Oh, I'm glad you asked that.
And we don't have a digital repository on campus, but I assume that would be a logical place.
Yes, and you probably know as a librarian that a GIS consultant or expert or person who does GIS has been known to be in the library.
Yeah.
Because there are so many data sets, and it takes a particular expertise to catalog and remember and know where all those data are. And I'm not a librarian, unfortunately, and I don't have an MLS, and I should. in a way, because the way I catalog data is the data are on my hard drive, and I know right where they are, or I know that I can go to this particular website and find some data. But it would be much more useful to say, here's the catalog of GIS data sets, and then students and faculty members can just go there rather than go into my hard drive.
Well, that is usually the case with digitally created data in any case. We're really, as librarians, quite good at cataloging digital data that has been derived from print sources.
Yeah.
But we're still feeling our way in terms of born digital data, which is what the GIS system packed with data would constitute. So are there examples of GIS systems that our listeners can access on the internet? Google Maps, I would say, is one, certainly. Google Earth.
You know, there are great mapping utilities that are out there that I hear about almost daily. But one local data set that's very easy to use, you need no GIS expertise at all, is at the county GIS office. Uh-huh. And I used it recently to look into buying a house, and it had tax parcel information. It almost was surprising how much information was there, but it had the owners of the different parcels and how much the person paid for the home. So the tax parcel lines are on there, and the street names are on your view of the map, and then underneath is an aerial photograph. So it's sort of then three layers of information, and with that information you can find out a lot, like how to get to the house that you're interested in buying, or how much your neighbor paid for her house, or what have you. But
is this Dutchess County?
It's Dutchess County.
And is it this accessible over the internet, or do you have to go to the county?
No, it's accessible over the internet. It's been around about 2 years now, but 3 years ago you needed to go down to the county and take a look at these maps, and now they make it available. Mm-hmm. And there are other ones like that too, but off the top of my head, I think listeners would be most interested in the local information. Yeah.
So just to get a bit philosophical, geographers, historians, and people who work with maps will tell you that maps are much more than simple devices that get us from A to B, and that they convey as much or more about ideas and relationships and the cultures that produce them as they convey factual information. Maps, of course, confer basic national and political identities, but they also reflect ideas about the romance of places, about our relationship with nature, about what constitutes here and there, up and down, right and left, under and over, finite and infinite, etc. And certainly maps often are used as instruments to impose authority and ownership, and they also serve as a way to organize time through historical mapping. Traditional maps do this in part through the use of print conventions, as well as other design elements that often borrow from the architectonics of the printed page, which itself has lately been analyzed by certain theorists of intellectual technology as an instrument of control, and colonial control in particular, beginning with the birth of print and the conquest of the New World that occur about the same time. And I wonder how much of this carries over onto the functionalities of GIS. Obviously, as we've mentioned, GIS systems are at least as much about presenting relationships as they are about simply allowing us to locate places by name or geographic coordinates. But do they also convey or impose other ideas about our beliefs concerning the look and feel of places, for instance, or about power relationships? Or on the other hand, is there a way these systems might cause us to even think differently about our basic systems of political organization or our relationship to nature, which after all have a lot to do with spatial organization? I know that's a big question.
It's big. But I think it comes back to what I said about GIS democratizing geographic information and geographic data. I think that conventional maps, they can obscure information or not show information that's important to some people. Mm-hmm. What's shown on a map is important to the map maker. What's not shown might be relevant as well. With GIS, a person is given a certain set of data, like street lines, and they extend through the whole county or the whole state or the whole country. They don't stop at a particular neighborhood that people want to ignore, for instance.
116th Street.
Right.
Like some, you were mentioning, some maps of Manhattan only really show you lower Manhattan.
That's right. The FAST map for Manhattan. The FAST map for Washington, D.C. will just show you the western and northern part of D.C. And completely ignore the east side of D.C. But GIS, you get all of D.C.
Yeah.
You get all of Manhattan, and you can show the whole thing, and the same thing, too, with any kind of demographic data. Yeah. You get it for everybody and every place.
One thing I have to say, Google Earth does this very nicely in that, you know, you fly over the Earth.
Right.
And there are no lines. If you want to take the lines out, you can control whether or not they're national boundaries or roads or whatever. And it gives you a much different sense of place.
Yep. Keep in mind with Google Earth that Google is an American company, so that has lots of information for the U.S.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it'll have maybe also a lot of information for European countries. Mm-hmm. But if you want to look at Africa or you want to look at India, where there should be plenty of data available, that's still limited in what you can find there. But sometimes it's dependent upon a country and how much data they have already available.
So, relatedly, and last question, do you have any other thoughts or hopes about the long-term or potential benefits of GIS technology for society as a whole?
Well,
do you ever find yourself thinking along utopian lines that this could change everything, or you know, or
well, I was
change
thrilled
some
with
things,
the NRC report coming out saying that everyone should think spatially, and that should be put into the three R's with an S at the end. Yeah. But I think that GIS is applicable to everybody, really, in all disciplines in the liberal arts. But I think looking at it as a whole, I think the world has gotten smaller, and understanding our neighbors is important. What I mean by that is, where is Iraq and Iran, and how close are they and to each other and to the rest of the world? And just having people look at maps more and more and understanding geography and how this is a small world, and we all have to live together. And I think that this type of mapping technology can help us do that. And I love that Google Maps and Google Earth and the like are available so that more people are not reluctant to jump into the technology. Mm-hmm. With GIS, it is a little bit of a hurdle. But if, say, you do use a software, an application like Google Earth, and you're seeing relationships between certain things, and you're looking at the topography, and you're looking at the aerial photographs, and now you want to do more, then you can use GIS.
So I'd like to thank you, Meg, for talking with us today
on
the Library Cafe.
Oh,
great. Yeah, it was. Especially as we invited you at the last minute.
Well, I love to talk about this stuff. Okay.
You've been listening to an interview with Meg Stewart, academic computing consultant for Geographical Information Systems here at Vassar College, about GIS. You're listening to WVKR 91.3 FM Poughkeepsie.